Hello.
Hello. Let's start the episode.
That was the goofiest way I think we've ever started an episode.
I don't think I've ever told you hello in our life.
Like you changed it to like the whole kid, everything. Hello. Hello. We're not doing like an audiobook here.
This is ASMR with movie boners. Welcome to this episode of Movie Boners.
Hi, everybody.
This should be a very fun one, a very festive one, I would say. Sort of.
Would you say it's festive?
Well, here's the thing.
Just because you have the word fastidious in it.
It's not fastidious, it's festivus, first of all. And also, but I mean, we are big fans of Christmas.
Yeah.
It's the season of joy and love and giving and all of the good things. But here's the problem. We've been doing this for 5 years. We've done a handful of Christmas episodes.
Yeah.
And running out of holidays here. So I figured let's do. And also, I was kind of inspired because, you know, we've been accused of being too positive in the past. And I think that's where the boners in the movie boners comes from, because we like and get excited about all kinds of movies.
It's true.
All qualities, all of that stuff. And so I thought, hey, what if we were annoyed for once? And
well, so you say this, it's funny to me because I was telling someone about what we're going to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, for 5 years, at least once every episode, we do go on rants.
Yeah.
And we do say stuff that will probably get us canceled. 5 years later, we're still not canceled. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, well, it's because nobody listens.
It's true. I mean, we've rattled some cages. I know that.
That's true. But I've got lots of comments.
Yeah. But it's funny to be accused of being overly positive, because mm-hmm. we have an arsenal of rants, things that make us mad, like not even pet peeves. Just things that were like, this was horrible. This sucks.
Really just specifically, personally offensive movies like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of Christmas Kingdom Doll.
Or Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So to be accused of overly positive about every movie, I'm like, someone has not actually listened. Just because we didn't think the Roadhouse remake was the worst thing ever.
That's exactly where I'm getting that quote from, actually. The nostalgia test guys accused us of that because we did not dislike the Roadhouse remake.
Yeah. We didn't think it was nearly as terrible as it should have been. But we did, we were entertained by how terrible Conor McGregor was in that movie.
Yeah. And had specific complaints, particularly about having no Sam Elliott partner character.
Yeah.
Yeah. We tried to temper ribs. Expectations. Right. Yes. Definitely no polar bears. The worst. Yeah.
So we're not overly positive, but this one does make me laugh because it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. It's going to be an interesting one. So we're doing our. As a Festivus, if you're not familiar with Festivus, Festivus is a holiday for the rest of us. I meant to get a pole. Usually there's a standard metal pole instead of a tree. And it's comprised of many traditions, feats of strength being one we can't do. We're pretty far apart from each other. But airing of grievances is another key component. And I thought that what a good time to air our grievances with movies, the film industry, Hollywood, advertising, even audiences. I have a lot of gripes and a lot of bones to pick with a lot of people. So it kind of runs the gamut. We'll be complaining about a lot of things and talking about our biggest pet peeves when it comes to movies.
We're airing it out today.
And the funny thing is it did kind of change how I watch movies and shows the last couple of weeks, because I've been actively looking for things that I dislike
while I watch it. So you've gone the cynical route the last 2 weeks.
Kind of trying to intentionally.
Sorry.
Yeah, just to be like, does that bother me? Does it bother me enough to complain about on the show? Sort of, maybe let it go, that kind of thing. But I have a pretty good list to get through. And I also put it out on Instagram to see if anybody else had complaints, and I got some good responses that I'll share here as well.
All right.
Get into it.
Well, let's do this.
But before we do that, you want to see something beautiful?
No.
Here we go. Check out this little graph where...
Is it going to be Zootopia just dominating everything again? Yeah.
Yeah. So Box Office Mojo Worldwide Gross just launched in the last 2 weeks. It's because... So scores have not really changed, except I'm at $4.6 billion now.
So stupid.
Zootopia in the last little more than 2 weeks has made... it's like a angel's eyelash away from $1 billion.
It has made so much money.
We are moments away from it being $1 billion. $992 million as of this Friday, which might not even include today's numbers. So, that'll be, I think, pretty safe to say two movies over $1 billion for me this year. I don't think that's happened before. I think it's always like...
Didn't it happen for you last year?
Did it?
I thought it did.
Last year was Barbie.
You had Barbie. You had like one or two others that had no right being good and then or making any money.
Maybe was it Super Mario Bros?
No, I had Mario.
That was your first $1 billion one.
And I can't remember.
Oppenheimer was almost $1 billion.
You had two of them last year. I know that.
I have to look back.
Yeah.
Well, I've started putting together the recap. People should know, this is the penultimate Movie Boners episode. We have one more episode in our pouch. Oh, I don't know what else to say. coming out next in 2 weeks. And I started putting together the roundup of what went right and what went wrong with the movie draft and ultimately pick a winner for next episode. And one of those things was going to be looking back at the last 3 years, because this is the fourth year we've done this.
Yeah.
And find total trends potentially. So I'll check and I'll let you know next time. But we're about a week away at the time of recording this from Avatar coming out, Avatar 3, Fire and Ash. And I think most importantly, The Housemaid comes out Christmas Day.
Maybe Housemaid will do $2 billion on Christmas Day.
Could be.
Doubt it. I bet no one goes to see it. Like, I bet no one watches it.
Yeah, it's not exactly a family-friendly movie, I don't think. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fun. So I guess, no other changes there. Tune in the next episode to see who wins that and where we go from here. What else? New stuff. What new stuff have you seen lately?
I have watched a couple new things. So took my daughter to go and see Five Nights at Freddy's 2.
That's
the movie that critics are like, it's only a 19% on Rotten Tomatoes. We hate movies like this. But it was a lot of fun. It's just like the first one. It's very entertaining. They ramped up the jump scare and the creeping factor. I should put a little caveat to that. Not scary.
Yeah.
Didn't jump. Not creeped out by any of it. But listening to the people around my daughter and I, it was effective. But the most important thing was, it was entertaining. And before we gripe about critics actively trying to ruin movies for people, which we've done a whole episode on, by the way, two of them. Again, we're not overly positive. We have two episodes dedicated to dismantling movie critics. Come on.
Fans especially.
Yeah. Highly entertaining. I enjoyed it. If you like the first one, you'll like this one. It's just, how can you not like practical effects and just embracing Five Nights at Freddy's movies takes place in the 90s, which makes it even more fun. So
a period piece.
Sure. Suck it, critics. It was fun. You know what movie critics are claiming triumphant? That was a boring pile of crap.
Tell me.
J. Kelly. With George Clooney and Adam Sandler.
The movie's called J. Kelly?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of this movie.
Oh my gosh, Jake, how have you not heard of this movie?
I've been under a rock, I guess. Oh, J. A. Y. Kelly.
Yeah.
I thought it was like I don't know, R. Kelly, like a letter.
Oh,
like
no, J. Kelly. So okay. It's George Clooney plays this actor, J. Kelly, who is getting this big old tribute to celebrate his career, and he's like thinking about his whole career, kind of rethinking of, wow, maybe I wasn't the nicest guy. I've missed out on so much, right?
Yeah.
Adam Sandler plays his helicopter manager who calls him puppy the whole movie, which every time he said it, I was like, what?
It's a weird choice.
It's got Laura Dern, who is part of the J. Kelly team. Anyways, it's an actor having a midlife crisis.
Greta Gerwig, isn't it?
Because
Noah Baumbach directed it. That's her husband, right?
I you're asking questions I don't know answers to.
Okay, I think so.
Anyways, so boring. And anyone saying that it's such a moving movie, no, it's really not. It's another Hollywood will glorify ourselves and no one really learns anything. There's no actual character growth to anything. It's just, look how depressing this guy is. That's it. Yeah. J. Kelly sucked. I was so mad at the end of that movie. Like, way to glorify yourselves again, Hollywood. Oh, yeah.
That's what they're good at.
Yeah. And then because it is Christmas and because I do get a kick out of watching non-traditional Christmas movies. I can't believe I had never watched this before, but I watched Fat Man with Mel Gibson.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it. I think I wanted to last year and then didn't get around to it.
It's so ridiculous. It's about like a 12-year-old boy who hires a hitman to go kill Santa. It's wild.
Okay.
It's entertaining. Like, it's not good. Yeah. But it's entertaining. Mel Gibson is a great Santa. He's such a... Well, he's a Mel Gibson Santa. So he's very, old and, very rough around the edges. Gets forced to work with the U.S. government. so he just complains. But it's... I didn't hate it. It wasn't great, but it entertained me on a few parts. But yeah.
Okay.
What about you?
I watched two shows.
Of course you did. Love is Blind movies. Italy.
No. Two of the best shows that I've seen in a really long time. They're just like one season, I guess, limited series kind of shows. Mm-hmm. The first one is called The Beast in Me.
And it has
Claire Danes, Matthew Reese, Brittany Snow. And Matthew Reese is like a rich guy who... has been accused of having killed his wife, but his wife kind of disappeared and is remarried to Brittany Snow. And then Claire Danes is a writer who can't figure out what to write about and decides to write about him. And so they kind of get together and start figuring out what a book will be about. And so there's a lot of, did he kill his wife? Did he not kill his wife? Is he creepy? Is he weird? I don't really know what's going on. But really, really well written show. I really enjoyed it. And I like the whole thing. I like the ride that it took you on. I like how it all came together. I don't want to spoil anything. Great performances, great characters, great everything. So I really liked The Beast in Me. And then also The Watcher from 2022 with Naomi Watts and Jennifer Coolidge and a bunch of people that I don't know the names of, but you definitely know the faces of. It's a really interesting show about Naomi Watts and her family move into a house and start getting creepy letters based on a true story.
I've watched that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Apparently, a lot of that or so much of that actually happened in real life, which is the even crazier part of it. But really interesting show. They just keep getting like these weird letters from someone who claims to be the Watcher and is watching them. And then they discover like secret tunnels in their house and all this stuff. And it gets very, very, very weird. Really cool show. I like that one a lot. Again, very interesting and very entertaining. And then we watched a movie that you would hate because for a few reasons. So it's called The Sacrifice from 2024 with Eric Bana and Sadie Sink. Sadie Sink plays Eric Bana's daughter, who Eric Bana's divorced. He's like a psychiatrist, something professor in like France or Germany or Denmark. I don't know. Europe somewhere. And she comes to visit him and live with him for a while. But when she gets there, she kind of gets tangled up in this cult that meets this guy on the subway. And then he starts introducing her to all these like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we all killed ourselves to save the planet kind of people. And turns out it's kind of adjacent or related to some like someone that her dad's helping the police investigate, or a group that her dad's helping investigate, but their paths like never really cross. So he doesn't know that she's involved with this guy that's involved with them. Really good thriller, really interesting and exciting. But yeah, you would hate it because of the cult thing. And also, yeah, and also just how she's a 16-year-old girl that's getting tangled up in this thing and her dad has no idea. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
But overall, good performances and good movie overall. And then the last movie, I didn't finish it because I was interested in it. So there's a movie from 2021 with Jake Gyllenhaal called The Guilty, where he plays like a 911 operator.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's a cop that used to be on the street, but got kind of pulled out for some disciplinary issues and needs to go to court soon. But he's working 911 like temporarily and doesn't have the temperament for it. That's part of the problem. A very good thriller because he answers this call about this lady who was abducted and her kids are at home and she's trying to like get help. And so he's trying to get the highway patrol to find the van she's in, but it's also like during the LA fires and stuff, and so things are all crazy. Really good thriller, very exciting for mostly being Jake Gyllenhaal in a room on the phone. But I had to stop it just because it was very stressful, and he is very frustrating as a character because he's reactionary to everything that's happening. But like I said, doesn't have the temperament for being in the 911 like operator room kind of guy. Wants to be like on the street. He's like, just kick the door down, go in and save these people. And they're like, we can't do that. You don't have a warrant, all this stuff. So good movie. Just frustrating to the point of like, maybe we watch this later kind of thing.
Not being able to watch it. Okay.
Yeah. The other thing, we had like 40 minutes left and we're like, let's watch something else.
Gotcha.
But I think we'll probably go back to it. So it was pretty good. And then that's it for me so far.
All right.
All right. So you want to talk about your biggest pet peeves with film and the media, the Hollywood entertainment media?
See, yeah, let's do it. But
a lot of my notes are very broad and general, like things that I think most people will say, that's pretty reasonable to be annoyed by that.
Right.
But then I do have a few that I think might just be me and my weird brain. And when something comes on, it just takes me out of it entirely. And I was kind of looking around online, and I think that everyone has a super niche interest that they know a lot about. And then when Hollywood tries to generally vaguely bring up a topic, you're like, that's not how that works. That's not I noticed a lot of people online, nurses really hate a lot of stuff, like when the needle goes in the arm for the IV in the wrong angle and all the like very important stuff, how CPR is used in
movies. I was going to say the CPR was a big complaint.
Yeah. I saw one guy that said that his dad really hates it when they use the wrong helicopter sound. Like, this sound is from a different helicopter than the one that's on screen. I'm like, no one knows that. You're the only one who's annoyed by that.
No one cares.
But kudos for you for knowing every helicopter sound, I guess. That's right. Kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny reading, like, what people are generally annoyed by in movies. I kind of came to one conclusion that a lot of the pet peeves mine, which I share with a lot of people, it turns out, I was like, yeah, maybe we're all just kind of overthinking or letting things get to us a little bit too much. Because there were some people that were like, I am never watching any more movies that do these things. And it's like, they're very simple, stupid things. Like, it does not affect a 2-hour movie, just so you're aware.
It's kind of that old adage, mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But there are a couple that I just shake my head about quite a bit whenever it happens in movies. One of them seems to still be happening. Like, it was more prominent in the olden days of Hollywood, but it shocks me that they still do it. And that kind of is more of my head shaking than the act itself. But my grievances, I would say, are more industry driven than the actual product. So what about you, Mister? I have a huge list and I have been cynical for 2 weeks, purposely trying to be annoyed by movies.
Well, I've kind of broke it up into categories. So I have issues with kind of movies in general. That's your basic cliche,
right?
Like obvious things like a binocular overlay. Like when they do binoculars in movies and that's not how binoculars work, I always think about it. I'm always like, have you ever looked through binoculars? It's not that hard. It's not a figure eight on its side like they do on the TV.
It's not the infinity symbol, guys.
Right. It's just try binoculars once in your life. So it's things like that. But then it also have like writing tropes or cliches or things. It's like, it's so common. And every time they do something like this is so annoying to me. Like, when someone gets knocked out in a movie, there, it's fine if it's like, you need to knock this guy out. But people can't be knocked out for 30, 45 minutes, an hour or two. When that happens in a movie, I'm like, that person is dead. Like, right, not good.
Brain activity has been altered. That's a bad thing.
Yeah. Like, it's the weirdest thing for me, but Tangled specifically, when she hits him with the frying pan and then he's just unconscious for an untold amount of time in the cabinet. She's trying to work all this stuff out and he eventually comes to. And I understand it's a cartoon and it's not real life, but also...
It's also a fairy tale because
it sets unrealistic expectations for how your physiology should work.
Does it?
These poor children are being misconstrued. And then when they wake up, it's like they had a refreshing nap and they're good to go. Like if you wake up from being knocked unconscious, you're going to be very, very like struggling for a while.
Yeah, that's you don't operate well shortly after. Yeah.
And then things in Hollywood. Hollywood is definitely a big one. You talked about that. But I've got a lot of on the Hollywood side. I'll wait to talk about that one. And then advertising. Advertising, I think, is a big problem on its own for a handful of specific reasons. And then the audience. I broke it up into the audience as well. I have problems with you people. Out there watching movies and talking about movies online and complaining about movies. Mostly the complaining. This is a weird thing for me to complain about people complaining, but there's this like overly instant negativity that people have with things that they just want to immediately complain about something with. And I think my big problem is that it's the gateway to cancel culture. Because when you're like, this person did this thing and it's bad without any actual conversation about the context or whatever. That's exactly what leads to cancel culture. Everybody's like, well, I just agree that when this thing happens, this is the response that we all need to jump on and have instantly.
Yeah. It's like the social media mentality. Oh, this is trending. Yeah. So to stay relevant or to have my likes or my follows or my, attention, I'm going to follow suit, and it's kind of sad.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I have a feeling. So, like, my I didn't make a giant list of stuff because one, I was like, Jake's probably gonna have a lot that we will be able to like agree on and be able to write the conversation out with. I was like, and Jake will laugh at my list because it's pretty short and it's pretty like, I don't like this, and then I move on. But
there isn't really anything that is like a deal breaker for me. Like you mentioned, someone says, oh, I'm not watching any more movies that do that. There's things that every time it happens, I think about how often it happens, or I think about something other than what the movie wants me to think about, and that's annoying for a minute, but it always passes, and then I'm right back in it again.
Right.
So
that's
not
fair.
A huge deal, but also stop doing it. It's annoying.
Yeah. I don't think I have any deal breakers either, actually. Well, no, I think I do have one deal breaker. I think I do.
Okay.
We'll get to it.
Okay. Too early for that.
Probably.
One of the ones that I feel like I saw a lot with people complain about, which made me happy because I want to complain about it too. It's one of the ones I wrote down before I started Googling things, is bad driving acting.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like specifically when they look at the passenger for too long.
Yeah.
It's become like an obvious tell that they're going to get in an accident and they're going to get sideswiped. But then also when it doesn't happen, you're just waiting for it to happen and it completely distracts you from whatever they're talking about.
So this is the one that I was kind of alluding to earlier. Like it made sense. It's a two-parter for me. It made sense in like old movies when they were using the spinning reel around the fake car, right?
Yeah.
They moved the steering wheel like so to give
way
the idea
too much.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Or like they'll actually turn the wheel and then it cuts to the wide shot and the car either stays going straight or it turns the opposite way that they turn the steering wheel or it doesn't swerve like their steering action would do. Anyways. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But it made more sense back then because everything was more like kind of, well, we'll kind of overdo some stuff, like oversell it just a little bit, just to give that movement. I'm shocked that people are still doing it now.
Yeah.
Because, yes, when you jerk your steering wheel like that, your car does not stay straight. Your car is going to be like, and then you get pulled over because that's suspicious. but the looking to the passenger for an excessive amount of time blows my mind because more times than not, the car seems to go straight.
Yeah.
And they're fine. Right. And it brings up a couple questions to me where I'm like, is the car autopiloting? And how is there no traffic that they're slamming into?
What you don't see is them just blowing through red lights.
Right. Where are the red lights? Where are the stop signs? Because I'm like, just where I live, there is a red light about every 100 to 150 yards. It's ridiculous. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to watch movies where, they're like full conversation like you and I are having, but, you know, the driver's looking to the passenger the whole conversation, I'm like, it's shocking that only one movie seems to depict how dangerous doing that is, and that's Dumb and Dumber, and that was made in, 1994. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, driving drives me crazy in movies.
The other big one that a lot of people complain about is phone etiquette. That when people are on the phone in a movie, they don't say goodbye. When they make plans with somebody, they don't get any of the actual details. They don't ask what time. Yeah. They don't.
That doesn't just qualify under phone etiquette. They do that when they're face to face too. Like TV shows are notorious for this when people are setting up dates, like first dates. They're like, hey, so I'll see you tonight. And then they leave the scene and you're like, where are you going to see them and when and how are you going to contact them? What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one I don't consider so much phone etiquette, but the saying goodbye, that one I don't care about. Do you know why I don't care about that one?
No, why?
Because who wants to see the reality of how awkward it is to say goodbye on the phone or in person? Like, guys, we've been doing this show for 5 years. We still can't say goodbye without it being weird.
Like, so, okay. All right, then. Sounds good. Yep. All right, I'm going to... Yep. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep, sounds good.
All right.
All right, I got it. Oh, you did what? Okay. Yeah, that's true. I get it. We got to move on.
So who wants to see that? That one I'm all right with. Don't care about. But the making plans, specifically when it's first dates, that one makes me shake my head just because they never share the info. There's no number exchange. There's no, like, not even modern, hey, what's your Instagram or your Facebook? I'll find you there. They just,
that's
see you tonight.
That's what the kids are doing these days.
And they always seem to show up, like, it always seems to be one of them is waiting already at the theater or at a restaurant outside. And then the other person comes walking up. They're like, oh, hey. And I'm like, no one is that calm standing awkwardly outside a place waiting for a date. Sorry. It's just nope.
Unless you're trying really hard to look cool.
Which only makes it more obvious how desperate you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, one that it bothers me every time I see it.
People find parking spots.
No, I don't care about that at all.
See, that one.
Does that bother you?
Yeah, it drives me nuts.
What if they just got lucky? That happens sometimes.
Rarely.
Very rarely, but we only see them park once or twice in a movie.
And I get it. Who wants to see a, you know, 5 minutes of them being like, dang it. Not that
going
one.
Around the block or whatever is way worse than trying to get off the phone.
It's just, I think it bothers me because I know how often I have to struggle to find a good parking spot, depending on where I'm going.
Yeah.
So I'm envious.
You're jealous mostly.
I am,
yeah.
I am.
You're like,
I am.
These bastards.
I oughta. All right. Anyways.
No, the one that really bothers me, but it's the kind of thing that nobody else I see complaining about it to the point that I feel gaslit and I'm like, is that even, am I wrong? Is that a thing? But I remember very specifically learning when I was a kid, the code of the US like flag, and that when you wear a patch on a uniform or whatever on your shoulder, that the stars are always forward as if the flag is flowing back. And that's how it's supposed to be all the time. It is almost never that way in movies. I don't know who's doing costumes in movies, but it's always stripes forward, stars backwards. Like, which I get you when you're looking at the flag. Normally, it's stars on the left. That would be stars on the left if it's on the shoulder. But then the flag's going backwards. And it's not how it's supposed to be. And it's the most annoying thing for someone who actually doesn't care about the flag code or anything really in real life. It's just such a simple thing to get right that you're doing this. You're doing uniforms for this like period, like war movie. It's supposed to be accurate, like war uniforms or whatever, or cop uniforms. It's like whatever. But they never, ever, 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 ever get it right.
I've never noticed it.
You're going to notice it every single time.
I highly doubt it.
I'm going to text you photos constantly. I'm like, I watched another movie where they had the freaking flag backwards. Like,
left on delivered.
I swear, it's every single movie. People tell me if I'm wrong, but it is the rule, and it is wrong every single time.
I've got one that's worse than that, because it happens. It has been the trope for any movie that has a romantic storyline in it, whether it's rom-com or drama, whatever. And I'm just blown away that they still do this. And it's like no one has common sense, period. And I know that mine is more accepted because even my daughter has shared the same grievance. whenever there is a misunderstanding about a situation or something someone said, there is never a moment of clarification. Do you realize that like 99% of the movies we have ever watched that has like a romantic conflict or a friendship conflict or a familial conflict literally could be solved if someone just went, wait, what did you say? Or wait, what did you mean with that? With like two lines of dialogue, we could avoid all the like the pathetic trope of misunderstandings and grand gestures to win everybody back or grand gestures to get forgiveness or, you know, can we start over? Like, seriously, regular conversation can solve so many issues. And I can't believe it's still being shown in movies where no one has the common sense to be like, wait, let's slow down for a sec. What's going on here? Let's figure this out. Like, no one cares.
Or is
smart enough to figure it out.
Just assume that what they saw or thought they saw or thought they heard is the right thing.
What was, my daughter and I were watching something and there was a conflict. And my daughter literally looked at me and was like, all they had to do was say, what did you say? And the problem was solved. It's like, nope, we're going to get...
That's the whole plot of the Sydney Sweeney, Glenn Powell movie, Anyone But You. Like, the beginning of is just them misunderstanding why you have to leave or do you want to be there or not. And then they hate each other the rest of the movie.
It just, it does bother me because every time I watch, whether it's a TV show or a movie, every time this stuff happens, my brain literally will just go into a, like, if he literally just said, you know, XYZ, all of this stress would just be done.
Right.
Just be done. And then you could focus on different aspects of the story. You could make, you could make people just having actual conversation interesting instead of he said, she said for 2 hours. And then at the end, you're like, we're so silly. Grand gesture of apology. Like, no one does this stuff. No. Stop it. Just stop it.
That's a good one. One that I'm not sure if it's because I'm getting old or older, but I feel like an old man when I complain about it, is putting important information in small text messages on someone's phone that they're trying, the camera tries to record.
I didn't even think about that one. I hate close-ups of text.
I'm like, what does that say? Is that, should I be reading that? Or I don't read it fast enough. And it's not just like modern phones in movies. I have it with old movies as well, where it's like, here's this letter that's like calligraphied. And I'm like, I don't know how to read those letters fast, quickly.
Right.
And I don't have time. And I get halfway through it and then it's gone. And I'm like, I guess I'm just going to have to figure it out as we go.
I'm with you on this one. I hate, like, it works when you watch a movie in the theater.
Better.
The cell phone screen is tiny. And it's,
and I actually like it when they started doing the thing where like the message will pop up
on the screen.
Like,
I think
a
they
subtitle,
should always
kind of.
Do that. That way you can know what's actually said.
But don't show it to us on the phone in the actor's hand. That's the worst.
Well, we were watching, I introduced my daughter to It's a Wonderful Life finally. Can't believe it took this long. But great movie. Anyways, there's a shot in it where they like, they show a letter that's cursive, but they hold, or no, sorry, it was Miracle on 34th Street. They hold the shot of the letter for the longest time.
I appreciate that, playing to the lowest common denominator.
Well, my daughter was like, wow, they're really making sure you can read the letter. And it was like a, yes, now, like, there's no guessing on what the plot is. You're not spending the rest of the movie thinking, I think that was an important, like, detail. They give you time to read.
That's good.
Do that. But I'm with you. I hate small messages in movies. And it's weird to be a fan of them putting the text messages on the screen.
Yeah.
But please do that so that your audience knows what's going on in the conversation.
Yeah.
It helps.
Yeah.
It really helps.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think it has the added value of being able to see the actor at the same time as well. So you kind of see their reaction as they're reading it and they're either excited or, you know, whatever.
That way you know that when they filmed the scene, the actor was literally like, okay, actually, it probably isn't even the actor. It's probably a stand-in or
some PA's thumb, yeah.
Some PA or even the director being like, I'll hold it. Like, yeah. Not even their hand, guys.
Right. I have a lot of... Okay, so the bomb when the timer ends at 1 second is an obvious one to complain about.
Oh, I don't care about that one. We grew up in the 90s. That was like
we grew up in the 90s, but also it got me thinking more when I saw people start talking about it. Why have a number? Why do I have a screen counting down with numbers visible on bombs at all? If it's a bomb, its purpose is to go off. Why do you need a countdown that's visible at all? And that's pretty weird, if you ask me. Not
especially
realistic.
When the bombs are like hidden. And
yeah,
and never meant yeah. to be found, but they do get found. Yeah,
right. Exactly. There's things like that where they're obviously trying to build tension, but I guess it's in like a cheap way, and that's what makes it annoying. The other thing that's really adjacent to that is when people need to get away, but the car won't start suddenly. Like it's a perfectly fine operating automobile the rest of the time until an axe murderer is chasing you.
Know, right, until you're in critical danger, and then it's like, oh no, come on. I don't really care about the bomb one just because I think I got so used to seeing it constantly in action movies that I just kind of accepted that one. Cars not starting, and typically in a horror film, that one is so predictable that now it's like I treat it as a bingo card almost, like you could say. The moment someone in a horror or a thriller movie gets in the car, you're like, won't start.
Yeah.
Check that one off.
You kind of need it for it to really qualify as the genre, I guess.
Right. But bringing up car tropes that bother me in movies, specifically action movies.
Okay.
And I'm looking at Mission Impossible 2. But no, well, yes, but I'm also looking at John Woo as a director.
Yeah.
When a car crash happens,
or a motorcycle crash, yeah,
it does not automatically explode
on contact. Yeah,
on contact, it also doesn't blow up from the back of the car when it smashes the front end of the car. So, I would say the mindless explosive car accidents. That one gets me shaking my head, which is a big reason why I'm also not a big Michael Bay fan, because if there's a car in a Michael Bay movie, it's blowing up for no reason.
It's not often that that takes me out of it, but there are some instances. I wish I could think of one now where I'm like,
Mission Impossible 2, when the black SUV slams into the car, it blows up from the back end.
Why did that thing blow up when it's like, it's like 9/11. Like that was an inside job on that car. That definitely should not.
That was a jump that I wasn't prepared for.
Jet fuel does not melt steel beams, my man. Like that's the weirdest thing for that to fall.
Was not
especially
ready for
Tower
that.
7, when no plane even hit that building and it also fell. Anyway, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. We are being canceled in a week, so
we're not being canceled. We're
being canceled now because I brought up how the Jews did not. What?
Oh my gosh.
You want? I mean, yeah. Anyway.
I lost my train of thought with that. You derailed so bad that my brain was like, I'm not even trying.
Like, well, yeah. We were talking about trains derailing and blowing up randomly.
Oh, another one.
Trains of thought. Yeah.
There's always a, you know, a car crash happens. They make fun of it in the Jim Carrey Grinch. and you see the tiny little dripping gas leak, and it's like an immediate, it's gonna blow! No. No.
Yeah.
It's really not, but okay.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people have assumptions about physics based on movies, and gasoline is a big one, though. Gasoline doesn't really work in the way that most people think it works. It is dangerous. You shouldn't mess around with this, around fire or sparks or whatever. I mean,
it ignites pretty fast when it's with fire, but
but it's more fumes than actual liquid. Yeah,
and it doesn't make a loud boom.
It's more of a
whoosh. It's like a whoop.
Yeah. Speaking of sounds, I have a lot of gun-related complaints, mostly because...
Are you going to complain that it's not the exact model of gun being fired?
No, but it is because it is my niche of particular interest. And so when things are off, I give them a lot of grace, but also there are things that are so far off, I'm like, please try a little bit. Like in John Wick, I understand... I'm okay with you getting some things wrong because you tried so hard in so many other ways. It's completely forgivable. Like the silencers in the subway, and they still make the little pew pew sounds as if nobody could possibly hear you shooting what is essentially sounds like a nail gun, even though it's silenced, is still quite loud around all these people. Fine. That's fine. That's totally fine. I don't mind it. But it's also things like pistols that don't have a hammer always making a cocking sound, like when you have like a Glock or whatever, and someone points it at someone, there's still like someone pulled the hammer back on like a Colt 44 cowboy pistol. No, that's not how that works. Never reloading, never malfunctioning, all of those things that are starting to get better, I think, particularly because of John Wick. But then also just actors not having sufficient training and obviously not having any idea what they're doing. And occasionally you'll get the weirdest prop departments. Like The Walking Dead, the show The Walking Dead is the worst at this, where they'll just have the weirdest assortment of guns and scopes and sights and flashlights and things installed completely wrong, backwards, in the wrong place, not even present when they need to be there. Just the weirdest things, and not even explainable that, oh, it's the post-apocalypse, they don't have it. Like, no, they're just the weirdest, randomest things that don't make any sense. It's very clear that somebody didn't know what they were doing, just threw it together out of a box.
So I do have one gun related, and I hope you can either explain it, because obviously I've never been schooled on guns. They're just not a big deal for me. But one thing that even from like my youth and to now, I always kind of like, I really just don't think this is necessary at all. It's cocking the weapon. So whether it's a pistol or like a handgun, everyone always cocks it before they do anything. It's always like loaded into the chamber, especially with shotguns. There's like constant, and I'm like, I get it sounds really cool and it's super intimidating. I don't think it's necessary every time you hold it to do that. So explain this to me. With shotguns, how many shells does it hold when you initially load?
Well, it depends on the size of it, but generally if it's like a pump action shotgun, that little tube underneath the barrel will hold 5, maybe 7 shells. Okay.
Do you have to pump it with every shell?
When you're shooting it, yeah. So if you would pump it once to put a shell into the barrel, and then you would shoot that shell, and then you would pump it again to get rid of the one that was in there and unpump it to put the new one in.
Perfect.
But, yeah, so you do need to do that every time you shoot.
Cool. So I'll forgive that one from now on.
But I do see in movies sometimes that someone will do the cocking sound on a gun, a pistol, or whatever, and then they'll be having a conversation or whatever, and then they'll do it again before they even get into action. I'm like, well, you just sent a bullet flying out that was not used, because that is completely unnecessary. The gun was already loaded.
So then what about handguns then? Like, because they're always, you know, putting one in the chamber. Whether they have fired or not, they're just constantly you know.
Right.
Is that actually necessary? I thought once you loaded it and
it's a pull back the slide and do the sound gun, a semi-automatic pistol. You do that once to load the first round from the magazine, but from that point on, every time you shoot it, the magazine pushes a new one up and the slide reciprocates back and forth, loading it automatically each time you pull up the trigger.
So what you're saying is they simply do it just because it's like a gun action.
Yeah, it's a sounds cool, looks cool, cool guy thing to do.
So I'll forgive the shotgun one, but the handgun one I'm going to continue to cringe at then. Okay.
Yes. That's fair. Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I often see them do that way too often, and it is cringy for sure.
I always shake my head because I'm always like, this seems so unnecessary. Like, I thought the idea was that it would be ready when you're ready to use it.
Yeah, that's a good idea when you're using a gun, was to have it ready to go. Particularly in the kind of instances you see them in movies where it's a life and death survival horror movie situation. It's a useful tool.
But I appreciate you clarifying the shotgun one at least for me, because I was like, this just seems unnecessary, but now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
That one actually makes kind of sense. So, okay.
Yeah. It can be confusing because they do have semi-automatic shotguns that are much more like the pistols where you, every time you pull the trigger, it loads it for you again. But it depends. Pump actions like you described every single time you got to pump it.
Okay.
There's a thing that I've been noticing more, and I feel like I don't notice it as much in old movies, and I don't know why that is. Maybe I just haven't seen the right ones. It's not in every movie, but there seems to be this thing more and more where when there's a suspenseful horror thriller kind of movie and the camera is tight on the main character, that the villain will just come in out of frame as the attack or the scare or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes me out of it because I think from the character's perspective outside of the bounds of the screen, and I'm like, that there's nothing that they were hiding behind. Like, they just, they're trying to trick you into being like, oh, there came
it's a jump scare.
Around a corner or whatever. But there's no corner. If you think about where that character is standing and how the room looks from their perspective, the bad guy was standing where they should see them. So why do you have no peripheral vision?
That was the word I was waiting to hear from. It's the lack of peripheral awareness. Like,
yeah,
as you were saying that, my daughter has her ceiling fan on in her room, so I can see into it.
Uh-huh.
I could see it, like, the air shuffling stuff in her room, and it caught my attention for a second. Peripheral. Like,
yeah.
As humans, when we see slight movement around us, I kind of seem to lean towards, we naturally will look at it to see, what is that?
What moved? It's a survival mechanism.
Right. So, yes, I'm aware of that. That one I forgive for a couple reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm just used to it and I expect it to happen in a horror or a thriller. So I'm like, they're going for the jump. Okay.
Yeah.
I also have to forgive it because if I try to think about what the nasty, horrible serial killer is actually doing to be able to hide out of frame, it probably is something really funny. Of like duck down in the most uncomfortable position, just waiting for the opportune moment to be like a boo, and thinking of a you know, slasher killer monster thing playing peekaboo is a little too funny to me, so I have to forgive it to put it out of my mind.
Yeah,
but it is a trope that's like, all right, I'm gonna piggyback on that one because I just thought of one. I'm kind of done with the horror movie fake out on the jump scare, particularly when it comes to like a fridge or a freezer door, and then they close it and no one's there, but you expected it, and they do it a couple times. I'm kind of over the fake out. Can you just bring back the cheesy jump scare? Like,
yeah, who cares? It's a very unfortunate side effect of this like postmodern trying to flip the trope on its head thing, where it's like, it was a thing for a long time and now we're trying to do the opposite and freak people, or like, I don't know what they're doing, but it's, yeah, it doesn't work because you know, it's like, then you start double guessing it, I guess, because the audience is like, well, there's not going to be someone there, but there could be someone there, but there's not going to be someone there. It's like, I know that you know that I know what's going to happen, yeah, kind of thing. So, and it's very annoying.
I realized that the trope was outdated now, which is funny to say, considering my example for you.
Okay.
My daughter and I, when she watched the whole Scream franchise, they don't do the fake outs in the first three, but they start doing that fake out in like 4, 5, and 6, but primarily in 6 or 5. Yeah. What number are we on? 5 and 6. Yeah. So the requel Scream movies, the ones that I just don't think are good. Right. Stand by that, by the way, having rewatched them. I still stand firm on that. The requels suck. So,
okay,
my daughter, they go to do the fake out, and my daughter was like, oh, so no one's there. And I was like, you don't know that? She's like, I do. And as soon as she said that, you know, that the, I think it's a mirror, like one of the bathroom mirrors or something, yeah, like that, closed, no one's there. And my daughter, 16, was like, it's kind of obvious. Trope killed. If your teenage audience has caught on to your formula, we're going to subvert expectations mentality is screwed. Like,
yeah,
bring back the cheesy jumps that they used to do in the 80s and 90s. You'll get your teenage audience back. Let's do that. Just bring it back. Just bring it back. It worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. I genuinely have more of a problem with it in mirrors, honestly.
Really?
Like when it's a fridge door or whatever, I'm like, whatever. But for some reason, when the mirror closes, maybe it's because I really want someone to be standing behind him in the mirror, and then it's not, I'm like, why did you even show this to me then? Because it's a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Because it's so, I don't know. Mirrors are just more effective when you close the mirror and there's suddenly someone behind him, but they don't really know, but they do know because then they see the mirror and it's right. Like, that's cool. But whatever.
It's true. Whatever.
speaking of tropes, the thing that was like funny the first couple times, but I've since grown very, very stale on it, is the smart ass kid with the filthy mouth that's like talks like he's 40, but he's 7.
Yeah.
It was funny, but no kid is that funny or that sassy. And
let's say it correctly, Jake. Okay. No kid is that smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
that's true.
You got to be kind of smart to be that clever, and no kid is that clever.
Yeah.
That's not a knock on anyone. That's simple truth.
Mm-hmm.
We were never that. We didn't get clever or sarcastic until like older.
Hopefully by the time I'm 40, I'll be clever. Right.
Because, you know, the sarcasm comes with life experience.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have that, and kids don't have that.
Yeah. I think that's my problem with it, is that they're talking like they've had all of this experience and they've seen some shit and they're like they've been through it, and now they're trying to teach this 30-year-old main character a life lesson by I don't know, pulling all these
right, like they're
clever,
they're using
quippy lines out.
They're using comedy as a defense mechanism to their PTSD of like the third grade. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I didn't even think of that one. Yeah, I'm with you on that one too. Like, it's just, you know what, I'm thinking of stuff like, what have I kind of gotten burned out on? I'm kind of burned out on people not just like in comedy, not just making jokes. Like, where are the gags? Where are just the jokes? I'm kind of over the, this is going to be funny because I'm realizing this in real time. Oh my gosh, this is hilarious. I think I'm completely over the Judd Apatow style of comedy. Like, I'm kind of done with the, we're going to ground comedy in very dated times.
Yeah.
With very specific like the Judd Apatow, the Seth MacFarlane, that style of humor, I think I'm done with. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, just bring back like the slapstick stupid gags. Like, you don't have to have a political joke on it. You don't have to have like commentary on society and everything that you're doing or saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also kind of done with the stoner, the 35-year-old and up stoner kind of mentality. Like, if you're over 30 and you're still smoking pot like you're in high school, bro.
Grow up. Grow up, touch grass. Not like, that kind of grass.
You should probably be rethinking something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I wonder how much of the, because I agree with you. I think the comedy angle especially speaks to the weakness of comedies in general now. And I think it's mm-hmm. because there isn't that emphasis on doing it for the jokes, doing it for the gags, making sure we have these specific moments and that they all land kind of comedies. It's that, oh, we have a comedy that's sort of kind of funny and these people are sort of kind of sarcastic and sort of kind of tell a story, but it's just so unfunny.
Like, right.
It's kind of funny. It's funny in the way that, like, oh, I kind of said that thing that made you smile, but it's not like laugh on the floor kind of funny that we had when we were younger. And I don't think it's because we're hard to amuse. I think it's just that it's hard to strike that kind of gold.
Hard to admit. I think we are, and I'm specifically talking you and I think we are very easy to amuse. We have been entertained by some of the, like, you guys thought that was funny? You thought that was great? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I continue to watch it over and over and always laugh.
Like, I still think Hubie Halloween is one of Adam Sandler's best, and it's a fantastic mm-hmm. Halloween movie. Yeah. That movie is like as dumb as you can get, and it's one of the most entertaining comedies I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was really hoping that with the success of the Naked Gun reboot, or this last one they did, because it was successful.
Did well, yeah.
I'm still holding out hope that because it was successful and it's so stupid and mm-hmm. it did make a movie for the gag, it didn't have any like societal commentary or agenda or anything. It was literally like,
yeah,
let's be dumb for 90 mm-hmm. minutes. Just mm-hmm. stupid. And it was successful. So I'm hoping that studios can look at that example and be like, all right, maybe we should start revisiting the 80s style, some of the 90s style, and the early 2000s. Like, those styles of comedy, people, make a quotable comedy again. That's what I miss. That's what I miss. Where's the quotable movies? No mm-hmm. one quotes movies anymore.
No. I mean, people want to. There's still, people will take the randomest thing and make it a meme. That's the same sort of thing.
Ish.
That there'll be a scene for a thing. Like I know you haven't seen the show, I don't think, but I talked about it a while ago, the Our Friends and Neighbors with Jon Hamm. That's mm-hmm. blowing up right now with that scene with him dancing in the club. And it's like,
is that what that's from?
Yeah, it's from like a scene where he just like crashes out and goes to the club and dances after he gets like high. Yeah, nobody knows it's from that show, but people want to take that thing and make it a thing that we all reference and all laugh about together.
But see, that's...
And we'll do that with anything. It's more fun to do it with quotes from a comedy, I think.
It's so much better to do it with quotes from movies, and specifically comedies. One, because everyone knows it. You can still walk around and quote Anchorman, and people are... Mm-hmm. Like, if you walked out and you were working on something and you go, 60% of the time it works every time. That's,
mm-hmm.
That math doesn't make sense. People know what you're saying.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I had no clue about that Jon Hamm thing. I saw that clip and was like, that looks like something I'm never going to watch or care about. So I just moved on with my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's yes, they're the kind of things I think that so many memes that you see, it's weird when you actually see it in context of the actual thing that it's from. It does happen to me a couple times, like, oh, that's what that is? I didn't even know it was a real thing. I thought it was just something that they made for the meme. It's weird.
Yeah.
This is kind of a two-parter, but so unnatural exposition-heavy conversations take me out of it, and particularly because I'm watching your movie. I'm following it the way that God intended me to follow movies. It's like, I understand. This isn't my first rodeo. I know how movies work. I watch it. I learn things. I follow the story. There's so many times when I'm watching a movie and the characters are explaining to each other things that they should already know or that they don't need to know. So why are you doing that unless you're trying to tell me to know? But I already also know because I was watching the movie. Either you already told me that, or I don't need to know that because I can put it together myself. Like, it's more fun. There's the same sort of thing with the ending of the movie. Sometimes the ending of the movie wraps it up in too much of a bow.
Yeah.
Let it go. Let it be. Like, let it lie there and let people think about it and be like, I guess, end it for themselves. Figure out, what does that mean? What is the context of that? All that stuff, I think, is important. And it annoys me when it doesn't do that. But it's a two-parter because I think that problem is a symptom of the two-screen problem that Netflix and all of these other streamers are needing to write into their movies. That they know people aren't paying attention as much anymore. And so they, instead of showing you something happen on screen because they know you might not be watching, you're just listening in the background, they have to say everything out loud all the time as if they're talking to someone that's not there. And it's very, very annoying.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if it's a trend. I saw a couple videos and they made me laugh because it's a kind of stupid thing that makes me laugh and I kind of want to do to someone. But have you seen any of the videos of like office workers that just start doing some stupid random thing just to take their boss off guard? Primarily, the one that makes me laugh the hardest is updating their boss on absolutely anything they do throughout the day. And it literally ranges from someone walking into their office and being like, hey, I showed up on time today, and just walking out. It ranges from that to like, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I tied my shoes. Your complaint reminds me of that gag because it's like,
why are you telling me this?
I don't need to know. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like,
I would like to just assume that that's already happening.
Right. But I think my biggest complaint about that isn't the fact that they are telling you absolutely everything that's going on. I think the problem is that they are blatantly telling their audience, you're too stupid to be able to put some of this together yourself. So we're just gonna, and it comes from they know everyone's scrolling on their phone anyways.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's
which is
my
part of the complaint.
Is like it feels like they're, instead of trying to combat the problem or trying to fix the problem, they're like instigating it, or not instigating. They're what's the word I'm looking for?
Perpetuating it.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of another word because I'm trying to think of like enabling. You're enabling the problem.
Yeah.
That's my bigger issue on that, is it feels like an enablement.
Right. Because it's not just the studios doing the over-exposition that's at fault. They're doing it because of this actual cause of the issue, which is people being on their phones and movies at the same time and not really giving either one the attention that it really deserves. And so if people just, chilled out and could focus on anything at any given time, and like, the audience is the problem with that being on their phone as much as anybody. And that you end up with people on their phone at the movie theater because they can't do that, or they're used to doing that at home. And so when they go to the theater, they can't sit still and watch. because it's what they always do. They always get on their phone during the movie.
It's amazing how your average movie, truly, your average movie is what, like an hour and 40, we'll just say an hour and 45 minutes. We'll just split the difference.
Sure.
You can't survive an hour and 45 minutes without scrolling Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah. It's a problem.
That's a problem. That's a big problem.
Right.
Like, put the phone down, guys. The world won't end. I promise.
Also, nothing that you're seeing is more interesting than what you're there to see.
Right. Like, this TikTok is just making you dumber. So let's nix that first and foremost. Instagram isn't doing anything to enhance your life, so you can go without scrolling that for a little bit. And for all the youngsters who don't have full-time jobs, you will be fired if all you do is hang out on your phone. And that means you don't make money, which means you can't do anything, including pay your phone bill to have the phone to scroll. So put the phone down,
capitalism
guys.
Yeah.
Put the phone down, guys. Yeah.
It's a problem.
We should instead of being like, we're perfect at this, we are terrible too.
Yes. I also own a phone and I'm on it too much. And I find myself when I pick up my phone because I'm watching something, thinking to myself, though, should I stop watching this? Because it's a trigger to me to indicate that I'm not as invested as I probably should be. Either I don't care about this show and I should watch something else, or it's just not the right time for it and I should go do something else. Instead of trying to do both and realizing I've finished a whole show and have no idea what it's about.
And you're like, wait, who are these people? What happened?
That happens so much. I'm like, what are their names? Does anybody in the show have a name? I don't know who anybody is. It happens to me.
I think probably one of my biggest complaints or grievances would be movies. A lot of movies are just not memorable.
Yeah.
There's a lot where it's just like, I don't know.
I saw someone say this in regards to music recently, but I think it applies to movies as well, which is that things were better when you had to pay for every album and even every song on iTunes or whatever, that there was just a bigger investment from the audience and a barrier to entry. And also the people making it had to try harder. And if you weren't cut out for that struggle, you would just quit and go to something else that you wanted to do or a value or whatever. And so the people that really, really, really wanted to do it were doing it and they were making good stuff. And the people that wanted to see it were willing to pay for it. Now you can stream whatever and there's all kinds of garbage out there and there's AI artists on Spotify just cranking out bullshit constantly. And it's like, this is, none of it's real and none of it matters. And it's just not special anymore in a lot of ways.
I'd be all right if the stream services just stopped. Like, I really would be. Sure, Netflix has had some fun. I just said Hubie Halloween's like one of Sandler's best. So if Netflix went away, obviously we would lose that. Sacrifices have to be made. I would be all right. Like, I would survive. I really would.
I think in any system, there's always going to be the people that care about something and work really hard on it, and it comes out and it is really, really good. You have that regardless. You're always going to have that because people want to make stuff and they want to make it good. But then you have these systems that just need to fill the void with all this other stuff. And they're like, do whatever. I don't care. And it doesn't need to mean anything. And nobody needs to care. And nobody needs to remember it. It just needs to be content. It needs to be hours. Yeah. It needs to be watch time. And that's it.
I think the idea of celebrity, which was like, that was a selling point for a long time until the last 15 years or so. Maybe a little less. I don't know. But I feel like it seems like the idea of celebrity or the idea of making movies or music or shows has really embraced the idea of the participation award almost, where it's like everyone can do all of this and you're all great. And it's like, no, there was a reason why the movie star was the movie star and why you were not. Like,
yeah,
but you said it well, where, I mean, back then the people that were successful because of the work that they were putting into it, whether you were a fan of theirs or not. They had to put work and effort and time into that thing because they were like, I have to sell this, so it needs to be good enough for people to purchase. And now everything's like, oh, it's just all there, available at all times. And it's really kind of ruined the allure of it. Or at least tainted it, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, so it's kind of weird to be in a position now of like, I kind of miss the days of celebrity or movie star because I just don't see it anymore.
Yeah.
And that kind of bumps me out. That's definitely fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess right in that vein, I have a topic that's pretty much the same, which is I hate it when they CGI dead actors into movies.
God, stop doing that. Like, just knock it off.
Like, a death sucks, obviously, but it's still so preferable to just recast that act character or rewrite your movie to do something else. Like, that is an option. The Christopher Nolan did it with The Dark Knight Rises. He's like, well, it sucks that I can't have Joker in the next movie, but also I'm not going to have Joker in the next movie.
Right, like, just,
and that's okay.
Got to make a whole different story. Cool.
Yeah. And the same sort of thing is CGIing the younger version of that actor into the movie. It's like, it's not that hard to cast a kid that looks vaguely like that actor.
Just embrace the like the old Hollywood adage where the kid doesn't even have to look anything like the actor. Just cast a kid. Just cast anyone. Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. The kid doesn't even need the same colored hair. Everybody knows. Your hair changes, your face changes, your body changes as you grow up. Just a kid.
Right.
Preferably the same gender. But any kid really will work to be that younger version of that character. We get it. The audience gets it as soon as you start showing the kid. You're like, oh, that's the person that I know as the older version.
Easy. Yeah, I think CGIing dead actors, it never looks good at all. Like, sorry. Just like I don't think de-aging actors ever looks good either. I think it was last week. I know they had to do it for Stranger Things season 5. They had to de-age. It wasn't the worst, but immediately it's just, I don't know why, dude, but it always reminds me of the Twilight baby. It just, like, that's the quality it constantly reminds me of, because that's what it looks like. Like, this looks terrible.
Yeah.
We should stop.
Just completely
stop. Like, and if you're in a position like with Stranger Things, if you're in that position where your actors are too old to be portraying that same age from previous time, then you need to rewrite your story and do just a blatant time jump and be like, we're just not going to revisit this. And if we do revisit stuff, we're just going to replay clips from previous seasons instead of adding extra crap. And in that vein too, especially with TV shows, your writing, especially if you're casting children, should automatically know, well, we want to go on for X number of seasons. Kids grow up, so we should probably conform our writing to their aging and not rely on, like, they'll stay young forever. It's not how reality works, guys. Sorry.
Yeah.
So stop CGIing people in general. Just let's stop. Let's just stop it.
Yeah. I don't know that. I don't know that we'll ever get to the point where you don't notice. Even if it looks picture perfect exact, the audience is like, did they really film that 10 years ago and then finally use it now? No. Right, you're like, so how did you make this? And it takes you out of the movie.
It does, because all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, so they use CGI in post-production. Oh, okay. So that actor mm-hmm. probably wasn't even there for that, actually. A lot of issues.
Yeah. I only have a couple of main ones left, mostly audience related, that you people out there are complaining that there's no original films. No, that's not true. It's just that you only saw three of the most marketed movies of the year and nothing else. There's a lot of original movies that come out every single year. You just need to watch more stuff.
Yeah, you just need
give
to
give it a shot.
Put the phone down and just go watch some movies.
Yeah. The other thing is complaining about very passable movies, but they're lackluster movies, as if it's the worst movie that's ever been made or that you've ever seen. It's like, you have not seen enough stuff if you think Thor 2 is the worst movie ever made. Like, calm down. It's a fine movie. It's not wonderful, but there's way, way worse out there.
There's far worse. And I know you and I are kind of speaking from a unique perspective, because we had the way that we hate movies completely altered.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
So I know our perspective is a little bit unique, because now when I complain about movies, I can rate it like, but did you really hate it like you hated, you know, Serbian? And you're like, not even close. This movie's amazing compared to that nonsense. Yeah, so
I would watch this movie every day for the rest of my life.
Right, like, I will suffer this forever. This is perfect. I know we rip into Avatar all the time, but honestly, like, if I had to choose between that or the majority of the lists that altered our mindset, I would gladly be like, guess I'm a James Cameron fan now, but only Avatar Cameron fan. That's it. Like, that'd be my life. I'd be all right.
Apparently, you can watch his movies forever because he's never going to stop making them. So that's good.
He's never. Although, did you see he has come out and said that this third Avatar could actually be the end of it?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which I thought, like, yeah, maybe he's realizing everyone's tired. Like, dude, you've been making these movies since 2008, and there's only three of them. Stop.
And then as far as advertising goes, advertising, I have a handful of them. But the main problem I have is whoever cuts trailers completely misrepresenting what the movie is. Like, it makes no sense to me. Who is this benefiting? It doesn't benefit the audience who's trying to figure out if they want to see it or not. And it doesn't benefit the studio who's trying to have the movie find the audience that wants to see it. It's just misleading everybody to show them this movie that's supposed to be like a terrifying horror movie, and it ends up being just like a slow burn, slightly creepy drama movie. And there
that
are people that want to see that.
Specific, Jake. Are you trying not to call out a movie? But that was very specific.
So I think we got lucky because we both really liked It Comes at Night. But it was not marketed as what it is at all.
No.
And maybe it's just because we happened to be open-minded in the way that when we saw it, I'm like, this movie is fantastic, but also not what it was represented as. And I think a lot of people disliked it because it wasn't what it was represented as. That's which fair. Is unfortunate because it's a fantastic movie.
It is a good movie. I thought you were going to... You had talked recently about a horror movie.
The Soderbergh Presence movie.
Yes. Yeah, that one was marketed as like absolutely just terrifying, like under your skin the whole time.
Scary haunted house ghost story movie. I was like, no, this ghost kind of walks around and looks at people and shakes the camera sometimes, and it's very, very boring.
That kind of sounds like a ghost story. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, I think so. I remember the cover in particular. I don't remember the movie exactly.
I don't remember the movie all that well, probably because I was like, there is nothing going on in this movie.
Yeah, that sounds like the same kind of movie.
So what's your other advertisement? Because I have one for advertisement, specifically trailers. And it's one that we have said 100 times, but I will always say it until I stop.
My other advertising one is so petty and so stupid, but I hate the floating head posters of, I understand there's SAG obligations that they're contractually required to have all of the stars' faces on the poster, mm-hmm. but there's, just find a better way to make the poster look good. Like,
what,
they,
you're tired
the floating
of
head,
the, it's like a, what's the shape? Like a, trying to think of, but they like, they, it's like an archway of floating heads with all the actors, yeah, like in
just like
the,
a mosaic of them busts it,
yeah, yeah, and they're all, yeah, dramatically looking off to the side but opposite directions,
different directions, yeah. Yes, it's just the worst thing ever. I hate it so much. Like, when a movie comes out and has an actual poster, even with like nobody on it, it's just like a, like It Comes at Night, phenomenal poster of just this
dog
looking
in
into
the
woods.
Woods
with the flashlight, like lighting up the dog, but like unable to light up the woods. That's a great poster for a movie.
It's intriguing.
Avengers Infinity War is a shitty poster. Like, it doesn't make me interested in the movie at all. And then the other slightly same sort of thing is when they have all of the actors shown like in a row or on the screen, and then they have all the names above them at the top of the poster. It's always like from top build to least build, but the names never line up with the person that it's above in the poster.
So that one's more like OCD on you then.
A little bit, okay. A little bit, yeah.
That one makes me laugh, especially like in the actual movie during like opening credits, if they flip it where they'll show like a different character moving around, but they show the top build name and it's not the same. It makes me laugh because I'm like, that's something I would do. Just knowing there's people like you that would be like, that's funny to me.
Yeah.
The poster, I am with you 100%. Like, I think posters should not, I know you have to market the actor, but if I see a poster that is just like a crazy image or a subtle image and that's it with the title,
yeah,
I am more drawn to be like, ooh, that's interesting. Like, I wonder what that's about. And then that gets me looking the movie up and being like, oh, this could be cool. This could be cool. Although every time I seem to get intrigued by this stuff, the movie never releases nationally, and then it's not advertised at all and forgotten. And you're like, oh, okay. My biggest pet peeve when it comes to the advertisement, specifically with movie trailers, two things. First and foremost, stop showing the entire, you are not there to give us the cliff notes of a movie. You're there to intrigue us to come into the film. Stop showing the entire movie. You know what the best trailer I've seen recently was? Street Fighter. Do you know why it was the best trailer I've seen for a while? Because it is a minute and 29 about. Seconds of people being kicked in the face.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all it is.
Well, joke's on you. That is the whole movie.
That is the whole movie. But they don't care about, like, there wasn't the freeze frame with the actors' names. There wasn't, like, no care to try and make it seem like it's going to have a dramatic, huge, intricate story. Nope. Mm-hmm. It is a minute 29 of people being kicked in the face. It's glorious. I watched that trailer. I watched that in the Supergirl trailer back to back and was like 100% more excited for Street Fighter. Way more excited for Street Fighter. No offense to Supergirl, but that was more enjoyable to watch that. So, trailers, you're there to entice the audience, not not sell the whole movie out. Stop it. And you know what else kind of bothers me? And maybe this is just me. Maybe it's because I'm like, I don't think anyone actually cares about this anymore. Like, or maybe it's just me being, stop trying to glorify these guys so high, because they're just not. Who gives a rip about Academy Award winner or Academy Award nominee? Who cares?
Yeah.
No one. When people hear, you know, Russell Crowe, no one thinks, ooh, Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Nope. They think Gladiator. They think past roles and being like, that was a cool movie. And guess what? Mm-hmm. Most of the time with these actors, the movie the audiences liked the most was not the award-winning film.
Yeah. 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 Most of the time when I see that, I'm like, she won an Academy Award? When did that happen? Like,
really?
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That one kind of just, I'm like, who cares? It doesn't make the movie any better. In fact, actually, half of the time your ensemble, the movie turns out to be just crap. And I'm usually angry, which is another pet peeve. Not advertisement, but I guess studio. If you're going to make an ensemble film, make it a quality ensemble film. Not a, like, look at all the big names and we have no clue what this movie's about.
Right. Like, give everyone enough to do.
Oh, right.
For to make sense.
And if they're just there to be fun cameos, then make it fun cameos. Make it very quick. Right. Make it very like, was that them? Make it, you know what? Make it like Brad Pitt cameoing in Deadpool 2 style. Like, he's on the screen for less than 2 seconds. One of the funniest cameos ever.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
What else?
Did you grow up thinking that air ducts were were going to be like a bigger thing and being able to crawl through spaces? And then when you saw an actual air duct, you were like, no one can fit in this.
Yeah. Yeah. I've completely misled thinking that air ducts were better modes of transportation than they are.
Yeah.
Or that quicksand was going to be a bigger problem.
Or quicksand was going to be a big issue in my life.
Yeah.
Joke's on me. Never left to go into the jungle.
Yeah, and I never will, just in case.
And I never will, because quicksand and snakes being potential vines, or mistaking vines for snakes. Like, I'm not scared of snakes, but I'd much rather not accidentally grab a python thinking I was grabbing a tree vine.
Me too.
Not all snakes rattle like rattlesnakes. End of story.
That's true. Sometimes they show up. I think that's all I really had, but I was going to list the follower submissions that we had on Instagram. So the Truth Tank had a lack of original ideas and fear of trying new ones. Fear of trying new ones is a big one.
Yeah.
Profit over art, which is very annoying, but also just 3-act scripts, which I thought was interesting, that you kind of start noticing that cadence more and more, and it's very, very annoying.
The cookie cutter film. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Kevin Scanlon says that people still haven't learned to shut the hell up at the theater. That's a real problem. Martin, the Film Versus Film, says split screen and anything hitting the camera lens takes me right out of it. Which, breaking that, like, make me realize I'm watching a movie, that's a problem, I think. And then 30 Seconds of Film says a new trend of rewriting villains as misunderstood victims.
Yeah.
That really, really sucks.
Yeah.
And just heroes, I think heroes also aren't what they used to be. That's really annoying.
Yeah.
So that, those are our pet peeves. Those are our pet peeves. And I let us know any that we missed or ones that you are annoyed by, because I know that there's a lot out there.
There's a lot. There's a lot. Cool. Yeah. Oh, man.
And then, and then next episode, we're doing our last episode, our top 10 endings of all time, very appropriately.
It's crazy. Yeah. Kind of weird. Kind of crazy. I think it's just now really settling on me that it's like, yeah.
The end is nigh. Yeah.
All right, Rorschach.
Yeah. So check that out next time. I think we'll have some fun announcements and we'll figure out who won the belt.
That's true.
That's very exciting.
It's true.
Okay, if we didn't already know, we'll see.
All right, bud.
All right, thank you, everybody. That was fun. Talk to you next time.
See, still not good at goodbyes. All right,
we'll get it.